dudes. Michelangelo here from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original one. Yeah, and you are listening to Canned Air Podcast. It happens to be a tribute to comics and pop culture like yours truly. Cowabunga!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley, and joining me today are some friends of ours from on the other side of the world and around the same microphone for the first time, which is going to be fun to explore there. Here to talk about their the next installment in their Snow Universe called Odyssey, coming out in October 2019. We welcome back Nick Goode, Harry Hughes, and Luke Barnes. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, cheers.
Hello.
We're going to have a good show today in our retro roundtable. By suggestion of our guest today, we're going to be talking remakes, whether it be movies, well, I guess movies or TV shows, right, guys? Was that the stipulations?
Yeah, movies, TV shows, games. Yeah,
I think it works.
Yeah. This is going to be fun, especially with Child's Play about to come out, because I'm a huge Child's Play fan, and boy, have I got some opinions. Then in our comic vault, I'm going to be talking about a book I found. It was like in the back issues in the basement of the comic store I typically go to, called 27, an Image comic from 2010. Really interesting. Kind of talks about, gives a fictional explanation as to why rock stars die around the age 27. So something we'll be talking about there, and then we're going to turn our full attention over to Nick, Harry, and Luke and talk about Odyssey. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. For $5 a month, you get access to our whole other show, the Canned Air Patreon Pod, which has its own archive on there now. So you'd be getting your money's worth, even if you just do it for a month. It was, what, 20 episodes? Come on. And also, if you're in the Columbus area and you'd like to come see your guys, we're going to be at the Korg Gaming Convention here on June 1st in Hilliard, Ohio. If you guys come out to our table, say I'm part of the Canned Air Nation, we're going to have something special just for you. So again, June 1st, come out and see us. I believe it's from 10 to 4, Classic Gaming Con. It's pretty cool. I've gone the last 4 years, and this is the first time we're going to have a booth there. So looking forward to that, but I think that about does it. So let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Do it. Do it.
Come on.
I'm here.
Come on. Do it now.
Oh my god! It killed Kenny!
Grass tastes bad!
Alright, guys. Remakes. I'm gonna let you guys start this was your idea.
Okay, so the big one that Harry and I were initially discussing when we thought of this was, and bear in mind we haven't played it yet, but was Resident Evil 2.
Oh, yes.
You know, I've tried so hard to get into the Resident Evil games, but I cannot get into, like, the fixed camera. Like, you're playing the whole game, like, through the perspective of a fucking security camera. It's irritating.
Yeah. I think it's very, like, Marmite. You either love that or you hate that. But
they've changed that, because on the latest ones, it is over your shoulder, isn't it?
It is. So,
yeah.
Oh, is it?
You played the remake?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Good.
It is good, yeah.
Is it terrifying?
No. but it's got scary moments in it, but a lot of it is very similar to the original, so you kind of know, like, you know this tyrant guy's gonna pop out. I mean, there are bits that are like, oh shit.
So you're saying, like, even in the remake, like, where certain zombies would pop out, like, all those same triggers are, like, still in place? They didn't mix it up at all?
They've mixed it up a bit, yeah, but a lot of the same triggers are in the same place. Like, you go to a certain room and there are things that are going to come out from the same place as the original, but there are extra elements as well, because, like you said, the camera is completely different, so you can actually shift the camera around, like,
right,
360. So it's a good remake.
I played the Resident Evil 1, and the biggest, like, so that did the same thing, where it was always the camera angles that was like the security tape type things. But the biggest thing that always hit me with that is that they redesigned the whole game. And so when you kill a zombie, its body stays there instead of, like, disappearing. And then you can run back through later on in the game when you just have to come through the same part of the mansion, and it will, like, stand up and it will be, like, mutated and come after you. And it's, like, really quick and it's, like, more vicious. And it, like, terrified me when I played that, because I was like, oh, it's dead. It's done. I'm moving on. No,
wrong.
Came back later on. attacked me.
That reminds me of in Halo, if you guys remember the Flood, those great big, I think they just called them poppers, where you had to kill them if they were coming at you, but when you kill them, they explode into a million other little things that try to come after you and kill you. It's like what do I do here?
Yeah, that's when I just put the controls down and accept my fate.
You know, even if all the triggers were the exact same between the remake and the original, and just the camera, you know, over the shoulder was different than the fixed, like, security camera view. It already would lend a whole new perspective to the game. It would still be like playing an entirely new game, I feel.
It was like a new game. Like, if you, it feels like a new game. It would be really hard to play this new version, the remake, and then go back to the old version. You'd be telling me.
Fuck this. Fucking.
So, but it's good. I mean, there's this enemy called the Tyrant who, like, terrorizes you throughout the whole game. And, like, in the first game, it's pretty much like you can sidestep, but he'll probably get you still. Yeah. But in this one, it's like I can run around a table for ages.
Yeah.
He may catch me or he may not, but it's a good place to start to talk about remakes, because it's been good, and they must have made a killing on it, because it,
I think the nostalgia of it as well is what made it so popular. Like, people love so any remake where you bring it and, you know, revamping it, because it does genuinely look incredible, graphics wise and everything. It's a nice.
I think the whole thing in the comic shop I work in, we got a bunch when this came out. We got a bunch of Resident Evil stuff in to, like, push it, and it just went. Like, they released a Resident Evil 2 board game, which just went as well, and it was all the hype around this game.
Really?
I think, because it didn't disappoint either. Because I think, there's probably some diehard fans, like, for things like the way I am for, like, Marvel and stuff. There's probably some Resident Evil fans who are like, this could be awful, but I think there's not one person I know that is a fan, and what I read, and they don't think, all right, this is worth every penny. Like, this is what
I've not come across anyone who disliked it.
Yeah. It was good all the way through. It was good. I think I have only played through Leon's story, though. I haven't played through the other, right. So that is, again, I would, if I had the time, I'd do that in a heartbeat, because that was, it was really good fun, the first playthrough.
Were there two playthroughs on the original?
Yeah,
because you do that.
It was like two discs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Two discs of hell.
Can you still play as Tofu?
No.
No. That was disappointing. That was the greatest, like, level character. You could just play as a piece of tofu with a knife.
No.
What a character.
I saw a really funny mod on, like, a mod of this with, instead of this tyrant villain, it was Thomas the Tank Engine chasing
him. Oh, yeah.
That would scare me.
No, it's not on the retro remake theme. I did see a mod where they made the dragon from Skyrim in the opening, Macho Man Randy Savage, and it is incredible. If you have a spare, like, 10 minutes, get on YouTube and put Macho Man mod to Skyrim, and it will change your life.
Yeah, how can you go wrong with that? Jesus. It'd be cool see in another, like, 10 years this game redone again, when, like, Oculus or, like, PlayStation VR technology is much more prominent and perfected. Just the total submersion in that game, man, talk about a different perspective.
When you're saying that, I don't know if I was talking to Nick about it, but someone about, like, the games going, well, not off subject but a bit further ahead, is like games that we play now that will be remade in, like, I don't know, 10-15 years time.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh man, the original is so much better. And we're like, you can move around the camera, and, like you just said, oh yeah, but this time you can go into the game. Like, oh man, here we were crying about, like, just security cameras on the first person. I'd be happy about a 360 camera, and then people are going in the game. It's like,
it doesn't even matter.
Can you imagine, like, Last of Us VR?
Oh my god, no.
Alien Isolation VR, you would never sleep again.
They did, like, a little sample of Alien Isolation, didn't they, VR, I think? Something like that, or, like, they did one of the maps so you could VR it or something.
I'm done.
Absolutely.
Never.
Fine.
But never going in there.
Do not want to play that.
Yeah.
I've tried the VR thing, and I don't know if it's just because it's, you know, still a young technology, or just because I get motion sick at the slightest movement of anything around me. But yeah, after I played it for a little bit, I was sick as fuck. Like, I had the worst headache. I had to go lay down. I thought I was going to throw up.
It's a really weird experience. Like, I did some of the Batman.
Wow. Okay.
That was weird as well. I was trying to throw a batarang for ages, and then I was like, oh my god, I don't know which way I'm facing anymore.
Like, the first one I tested was like a, I say tested as if I'm like an employee.
When you created it.
When I was working on this Star Wars film, when I first tried it out, it was a really basic one, but it was like a Star Wars themed one, and you put the headset on, and it was just like you could look around, and I think you were in like on a speeder. It was set from like the new Star Wars with Rey.
Yeah,
And you're on like the speeder, and you could sort of look around. There was like a wrecked Star Destroyer and stuff, and that was pretty cool. You couldn't do anything, but it looked
still, though, just the experience would be sweet.
Yeah, I think all it required is like, because I just had normal headphones in, but if you had like a full surround sound and everything, it would be amazing to do.
Because I tried the Arkham one. It was like the tester one that you could go into like a game store and they'd like let you try it out. But it was only like 10 minutes. And so I like sort of put it on, and I remember the like tester demo was like you'd stand on top of a gargoyle.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And I just remember like putting it on and then was instantly like, oh my God, I'm on top of a gargoyle. It's and it got me thinking though. I was like, imagine them remaking like Arkham City.
Oh my God.
Just be like,
and just so many games would be crazy.
Yeah.
All it's the VR-induced heart attacks from people jumping off buildings and shit.
It's being sick all over. But in the game, in reality.
Yeah, can you imagine all the houses you'd actually break into as well? If you didn't have some means of like staying still and moving, you would just be running around like trying to leap over cars, but actually jumping through people's houses, running through people's...
kicking children in the face. Yeah,
it's very extreme. Yeah.
So the game's like casting a new reality over the actual reality around us. So a kid might look like an enemy.
I think it's the goons in the game. Then you're having a massive brawl with the police.
At that point, if I was playing World of Warcraft, do you reckon it'd be acceptable to turn up to work as like a wizard? If I'm just taking it
to the reality,
I think it's acceptable anyway. You should just turn up as a wizard. We'll say yes, so you do that.
Yeah, please do that.
What were the other remakes we were going to talk about? We did say Child's Play. We spoke about that.
Yes. I've loved Child's Play since they were coming out. You know, obviously, I was a little young for when the first one came out, but for years, been following them. I have a Chucky doll here in the room with me. I'm a hardcore fan, and I've got mixed feelings about that. I've wanted a reboot of the franchise, but it looks like they're just taking a little too many liberties with it. Like, I love the idea in the original series of, you know, the serial killer Charles Lee Ray using voodoo to put his soul in this doll. And it looks like this new one's just going to be like a defected, like, AI kind of doll.
Yeah, it scans it. It's like, I saw the trailer. I don't think you've seen the trailer, have you?
No, I haven't seen the trailer, no.
Okay, so what happens in the trailer, Nick?
Okay.
he scans the Chucky doll. He switches on, doesn't he? And it scans the kid.
Right.
Ooh.
And then he's like, I don't know if it knows all the secrets or something.
It's almost because it's connected to Wi-Fi.
It hacks everything
and just knows stuff. You know how like with, if you have like Alexa, you can turn off the lights and things.
Yeah.
It seems like it can do that. So the doll's got like control.
Control, yeah.
It's like an elf on the shelf.
That's what I got from it.
There are things that I like about it. I like
Mark Hamill.
I like the fact they're doing another one.
Oh yeah, Mark Hamill for sure.
That was what I was going to say. Yeah. That is like the big, that's the big draw of it. I thought the kid in the trailer looked quite good as well. Sometimes I think it's all about casting in these kind of films as well, isn't it?
He looks a little old for my taste, like right on the cusp of being a little too old for a doll like this, but maybe I'm wrong.
Long run,
they're all gonna die.
Right. I want to know what his motive is going to be, because again, you know, with the voodoo thing, you know, he had to get to this kid as quickly as he could to transfer his soul into the kid. It had to be the kid because the kid was the first one that learned he was alive. For some reason, that makes him the one that has to be the soul carrier. But like, what's this doll's motive other than just like maybe there's a hacker on like an angry hacker on the other side of this doll or something?
They might do like a similar thing, but just make it more relevant to like modern technology. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of. I only saw the first like trailer, so you only get what it shows you. But then it might still be the case that it's voodoo and it's just more in tune with modern technology and
Could you imagine
Wi-Fi and stuff.
Voodoo in modern technology, like voodoo with Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it gets
off.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, there's an avenue I've never gone down with thought. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, literally can just transfer itself from like house to house.
Using Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
it's like fucking Ultron, isn't he?
Oh yeah. My god. Evil, sort of more sadistic version of Ultron.
Like we're just about to start writing our next comic.
Yeah. Stop everything. Yeah. Put these down.
Voodoo-fy. Yeah. You'd never read that, would you?
Well, why do?
I would read that. I'd read that shit real quick. I don't know. I'm going to try and keep high hopes for Child's Play. But, you know, the original franchise went so off the rails and batshit crazy with itself that, like, no matter what they do, it's kind of going to be better where they were ending up. You know, they had the whole Seed of Chucky, which was god awful. Like, that's got to be the worst film I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm also looking at this franchise through rose-colored glasses because I love him. So to still have such a harsh hatred for it, I mean, damn, that speaks in volumes.
Yeah.
But it's been quite a good break now, hasn't it, from the Chucky films? It's not like this is fresh in our mind. Like, I guess it's fresh in some people's minds, but it's not and they're redoing it.
There's been two movies come out since that, but they haven't been in the theater. They've just, like, gone straight to DVD. Like, the first one being, what was it, The Curse of Chucky, which wasn't really bad. That one went back to the original roots where you're kind of looking at it through the victim's eyes instead of, you know, following the dolls around in a horror comedy kind of a movie. And it was actually pretty good. But then the one after that, it was called The Cult of Chucky, where he was, like, able to summon, like, a whole bunch of good guy dolls to life. It was... it shit the bed really bad on that movie.
Oh no. Yeah. I hadn't even heard about those.
I heard about the second one. Yeah. I remember hearing about it. I think I read about it.
That's when retro remakes go bad.
Yeah. I hadn't even heard. I don't know if this is still in the works since Disney is just like fucking consuming all these production companies, but there was even a Child's Play TV series in the works, but I haven't heard anything about that in a while.
Imagine if that was on Disney.
Yeah.
It's like, we've got all the Simpsons, we're going to put Winnie the Pooh back and Child's Play.
Yeah.
Tune in, kids.
Oh, my God.
It's more fun.
Yeah, Child's Play.
Yeah. Just going to put that one under the radar.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this one? Going in the same realm of horror, did you guys ever see the Nightmare on Elm Street remake?
I don't think I did. I saw the trailers, got really excited, and then didn't ever watch it. Because I think the opinion of it was really poor, generally.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
It was.
I don't know.
That sounds about right, actually.
It just
there's a lot of deep thought.
Trying to think how to like not.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being absolutely shocking bad, and 0 being it's okay. I've just done that the other way around. Sorry. Just to spin you.
Voodoo-fy.
Yeah, 10 being voodoo-fy and 0 being that Chucky remake where he resurrects other dolls.
Probably about.
That's one hell of a spectrum.
About 7 or 8.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I was going to say an 8 or a 9.
That's decent.
I just didn't find it scary in any way. Like, I remember watching Nightmare on Elm Street when I was younger and I remember being like, I don't want to dream.
Don't dream.
What happens?
Yeah.
I just don't want to meet him.
Does the new one still do the whole dream thing, or is it more?
No, it definitely does. Freddy Krueger has always been an interesting character to me because, like, in the 80s, you know, in the height of popularity, this character is marketed to not only horror fans but children as well. I mean, weren't there like action figures, toys, clothing, and stuff, and it's like you're marketing the dead, like, demon entity of a serial, like, killing child molester and then marketing him to children. Like, it's always been a, like, what the fuck's kind of going on here? But
as you figure, you're show and tell at school.
Right.
Like, oh, no.
But they never focused much on that in the original trilogy. You know, they kind of just give a brief description from Nancy's mother about what happened. And then it's just, like, on with the slash and, you know, slash and kill it, all that kind of stuff. But the new one, like, spent so much time alluding to the backstory.
It was an origin story.
Right.
Yeah, groundskeeper at a daycare, and he had, like, a hidden room where he was taking kids, and it was just, I was like, come on, this is a bit much, you know. You couldn't find the same, I don't know, intrigue with the character. You know, it's Robert Englund or nothing for me, I guess.
It's the new one, it was Rorschach, wasn't it, from Watchmen?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
I can't remember, actually. So another remake that I think is a good remake and that ties into this. So I can't remember what came first, the remake of Evil Dead or the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street.
It was Evil Dead first.
Evil Dead first. Because Evil Dead, I loved the remake.
Yeah, that was great.
Good.
And it was because it didn't really like lean into like having another version of Ash. It wasn't like we're going for like a cult icon. It was more like we're just going to make a horrifying film.
Mm-hmm. And it was really, really well.
I think it worked really well.
It was
well.
Pretty horrifying, but it was the goriest thing I've probably ever seen.
Yeah,
I've
so
seen,
gory.
I don't know if I can top it now, but yeah, that was pretty...
It was pretty good. The tongue bit was nice.
Yeah.
I've never seen that one. I need to see that.
Oh, check it out.
It's, yeah. It's, I got really lucky with that. Fun side story.
There's a really... Yeah, like when it's a tongue bit that me... I don't... There's not many... There's not much that can make me, like, look at... like. Close my eyes a little bit.
There was a lot in
there was quite a lot in that Evil Dead that made me think.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of scenes.
I generally don't want to see that happen.
Yeah.
But it's happening. You know when you close your eyes, but you keep your eye open a tiny bit, which is pointless, because you can still see what's happening, but it's like, if I can see a bit more, it won't happen to me.
Yeah. it is actually packed with it. It doesn't hold back at all. No. You're kind of like where you're kind of wanting it to like suggest something that happens. It actually absolutely does not. It goes, oh, this is what you're wanting. Yeah. And it goes, we're going to give you that plus 5,000.
Yeah. Which is almost, that's almost what I wanted Nightmare on Elm Street to be like, is to find the horror again, like to really terrify me. And it just didn't.
Whereas, I remember getting back from the Evil Dead one, my brothers and that being like, oh, how was it? And I was like, yeah, that was actually pretty terrifying, like disturbing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
disturbing.
Yeah,
like
if you wanted,
said on a remake thing, it's a good.
It did really well because the original, we actually rewatched the original in the cinema not long ago.
God, yeah.
And it's not aged well.
it's like, it's corny. There's still bits that.
It's entertaining, but it's nowhere near as good a horror film as the remake, I don't think.
No, the remake's definitely more of a horror.
The remake is terrifying.
But then the original has Ash, who is
groovy.
He just show up at the end of the mini spoiler.
But not in the film.
No, he's just a post-credits little nod, which is nice. Yeah. But I 100% recommend the remake of Evil Dead. It is good.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
That's all I've ever heard about it. I'll need to check it out. I really do.
Yeah, it's not a long film either, so it won't take too much time out of the day. Yeah.
Just take time out of your sleep.
Yeah, watch it in the
day.
Yeah,
very good, very good. All right, well, here are some controversial maybe remakes. How about anything Michael Bay has laid his fucking fingers on, Transformers or TMNT?
Actually, that's something we were, because my wife and I, we watched Bumblebee the other day, which does, I guess it's not a remake, but it. Originally, when they were doing it, it was supposed to be a continuation. But then the further they got into production, I think they felt quite good about it. It was like, right, let's just say it's... Have you seen Bumblebee?
It looks like it's going to, really change the tide of my opinion for those movies.
It's really good. The first 10 minutes... I mean, I liked the first Michael Bay Transformers.
Yeah, I think the first
Kid in me liked it, but then the adult kid in me loved the first 10 minutes of Bumblebee because it's all on Cybertron.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And then as it goes on, it doesn't, it's not focusing on like Megan Fox and like, it's all right to focus on Megan Fox, but
it's like a buddy film.
It's like a buddy film, and it's like what Transformers should be.
It's what I liked about the first one with Sam Witwicky and Bumblebee, and they've taken that and made a whole film out of it with more of the Cybertron action.
Because
you only really got a glimmer of it in the first Transformers where they have that little. Fully meet up and they're like, oh, this is why we're here, and they show like a little flashback to Megatron messing up Cybertron.
And they keep all of it, they keep Megatron and stuff. That's not a spoiler, they just keep Megatron out of it, which is great because he's something that should be built towards but
not thrown in.
And it was, it's probably not a remake. It's not a remake, but it's a reboot.
It's kind of like, it feels like it fits in with the continuity, but there's points where it is kind of like a refreshing entry. So but I think that is a good start. I think they could remake those films and do really well, but I think I'd just do a completely different direction if I were.
It's just Michael Bay had the smallest part in it, from what I hear, which is good.
Absolutely.
Awful.
Kicked off the project.
What did he remake recently? He did something...
Did he do Turtles?
There's talks of the Turtles being rebooted again. I don't know if it's going to be with Michael Bay, but from what I've heard, they're talking about maybe even going back to like the rubber suits.
No way. Bring them back.
Yeah, do that.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It scares me when everyone says going back, but like it genuinely looks better.
Yeah, it did look better.
Like,
Like the best Yoda has ever looked in Star Wars is Empire.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So I'm kind of like, sure, go for it.
Hashtag bring back the rubber.
It's so long as they don't have those four.
Like, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that, I don't know if that
sounds like a different kind of campaign.
Yeah, they'd have to totally have Jim Henson's creature shop in on the mix, because that third movie, they looked like dog shit. They looked so bad.
Because that's a remake in itself, isn't it? Like the Michael Bay or whatever he was doing with the new Turtles, which is where their faces were like super weird. They look like Koopa Troopas from
Mario. Ironically,
yeah, they did.
Yeah, Mega Fox is in it again. She's everywhere. She's voodoo Wi-Fi.
Everything.
But I remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was younger, the first and the second one, when it was all about the ooze and stuff. Quality stuff.
The second one hasn't aged with me well. Like, even as a kid, I was into it because I was just living and breathing all things Turtles. But just how, you know, the first one was dark, you know, they were fighting with their weapons. And the second one, like in the first 5 minutes, they're like fighting off trained ninjas with like sausage links and fucking like toys around a toy store. It's like, what the fuck's happening here?
Second one was like, but it was I think it's the first one did quite well. So it was all about like they were throwing things in there for no reason, like advertisements and stuff. And
yeah, the first one was, you know, heavily inspired off of the comic series. And since it was a hit, like you're saying, the second one they did heavily off the cartoon.
Yeah.
And I don't think you ever really see them combat with their actual weapons. They'll draw them and hold them. But when it comes to fighting, you know, like the cartoon, I think it's just more like, I don't know, tipping shit over on the bad guys, or you know what I mean, kicking them, never actually using their weapons or killing anyone.
Yeah, lame.
Because it's the best. It's the first one where Leonardo is like in the bathtub for ages because he's had the absolute crap kicked out of him.
Do you know what? Hands up, I've not seen any of the Turtle films.
What?
No,
wait,
legit.
You turn around and watch that TV now.
No. Holy shit! I mean, the first one you have to watch. I was going to ask if you consider yourself a fan at all, like on any level. But if you haven't seen them, I would say no.
Well, I've watched the cartoons when I was a kid, but I don't. They're obviously not got massive credit. They're just entertainment for kids.
I'm talking about the cartoons as well. Yeah. Since you've been here. Oh yeah, because I was scared when I was little of the pizza monsters.
Yeah.
So I've seen things like that. That's out in the world now.
And I think everyone can't cut that.
That'd be terrifying. That's scarier than the Evil Dead.
Yeah, the pizza man. But no, I enjoyed the Turtles, and I think they're cool. I'm like, sure, I'm not going to diss Turtles, not live. I've not seen the films.
I think that's another strong case for, and again, we've talked about it quite a lot, is that it feels like there are people that sit in a room and they think, right, this is how we're going to make a crap load of money from this property.
Mm.
But they're not being loyal to the material. They just go nuts for it.
Amazing that it can even, you know, get through, you know, the series of writing, the directing, all the levels of quality check. Like, nobody through that whole process is like, maybe you're fucking this up.
It feels like every time I've seen a bad film, like someone or a group of people sat down and were like, yes, this is fucking great.
That came out, that's being now pushed back 3 months.
Oh, yeah, Sonic, yeah.
There were some people in there, I don't know if you saw the Sonic trailer.
Yeah,
I did. And Sonic looked absolutely mental.
Yeah, it was a bit weird.
Kid in a costume. Oh, he's like CGI. I was so confused. I was like, Jim Carrey, that's cool.
Yeah,
he's Dr. Robotnik. That's amazing. It's probably going to be terrible, but fair play to Jim Carrey. He's there. But then I was like, and then the director was like, I'm so glad for all the feedback. You're right. We're going to fix him. We're going to make him look more like the computer game. We'll push it back a little bit. But again, there were people in a room that thought, let's do Sonic.
Yeah.
This looked good.
Someone went to push the button on that train. Oh my God, this looks amazing.
They're trying to get someone, they want to get the lead animator fired. They're like, it looks great, mate. Yeah.
It's not bad for them because it is quite hard to make what is an animated character that looks nothing like a real life thing and try and make it look realistic. And I think that's what they tried to do.
Exactly. That's exactly right. But, you know, when you're already dealing with some subject matter, like a fucking hedgehog that runs like the Flash and collects rings, like, It's like, why even try to make it look the least bit real? Just fucking roll with it, you know?
Yeah. A hedgehog that runs fucking fast like the Flash.
Yeah.
I am going to see it.
Yeah. Done.
The other side of the coin as well is that, like, kind of like what Harry's saying as well, like, it's, you can't please everyone. Like, you could, yeah, they could have put the computer game Sonic in and thought, oh, why aren't they pushing the boat out and trying a bit more? Like, you know, there are these conversations going. I think most of the time they get the conversations wrong and they do go the wrong route because they think money, money, money. Yeah.
Thing is, you can do it really right. Like the Detective Pikachu movie, that Pikachu and all the Pokemon in it looks spot on.
Yeah.
And they've literally, they've not messed with anything. They've just gone, look, let's just smack the Pokemon from the cartoons in the film and Pikachu looks adorable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they're redoing Mortal Kombat as well. And that, yeah, the Mortal Kombat reboot, then that is like... That first film, I loved that when I was a kid. I thought Mortal Kombat was amazing as a film.
I can see tears.
Yeah, yeah. That's the same. Imagine how well they could do Mortal Kombat now, like with the.
I remember seeing of, like, the Goro from the original Mortal Kombat, and that amazing. Was all practical effects, like a big animatronic suit,
yeah,
and that,
yeah,
and it looked awesome. Yeah. So, if they can literally, if they carry on that route, I think practical effects generally look way better, but certain things CGI has to be
involved. That Mortal Kombat bundle has to open up with just like the logo and then like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, there's no plot,
no,
just constant fighting.
That's so good. Just going back to what one of you just said, you know, the practical effects, you know, by far is always the way to go. And like there's a standard that I hold all CGI to, and it's Jurassic Park, because they did it spot on. I mean, you can look at movies that use CGI 2 to 3 years after Jurassic Park and they look like they were probably made 10 years before, like it's so shitty. But how Jurassic Park got it right was, you know, again, they went as practical as they could, like the T-Rex. That's a huge fucking animatronic puppet. They just... The CG was used to fill the gaps where your focus isn't concentrated, like the legs, you know, in the shadows or something, shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's one of the best points about that new Evil Dead is that is hugely practical effects. I think the directors and I'll talk about it afterwards, they're like, there's so little CGI. Like, it's literally, as you said, like to fill the little gaps in between. But all the gory effects, all the blood.
Yeah, which makes it definitely all, like, more harrowing. Yeah,
The film is, that's why I think it is so scary and real. Is because like all of it that you're seeing did actually happen. Yeah, I mean, it's not really someone gets killed or anything, but it is a real puppet thing or a real you know, prop or prosthetic limb or whatever. Yeah, and it does make it so real.
There's a scene in Jurassic Park. You know, that's one of my favorite films, and I've seen it time after time after time, so many times. But there's a scene, you know, after the T-Rex comes through the fence and starts messing with the kid's car, where Alan Grant jumps out of his vehicle with the flare, you know, to get his attention. Yeah. And that split scene where the T-Rex turns from the Jeep and faces him and just screams in his face, every single time I watch that, it lands for that very reason. It was real. It was really happening right there. And it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. If they had done that CG, it would lose all effect. Like if you focus your concentration on the Brontosaurus at the very beginning, you know, that's obviously entirely CG and you can see a big difference. I mean, that scene still has impact, but you can tell this thing is completely computer animated versus that T-Rex. I don't know. It always lands so much better.
There is one like slight hole in the film though with the practical effects is when, you know, the scene in the kitchen where they're all the kid and the two kids are hiding.
Yes, I know what you're, yes.
Yeah, the raptors sort of like come into the room. And there's, if you're in the briefest moment, as one of the raptors comes in, the prop falls forward slightly. And if you watch the film and slow it down, you can see a hand come from behind the door and grab the raptor's tail just to steady it.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I never noticed it as a kid. And I saw people talking about it. And I was like, nah, I think they're hyping that up. But it is legitimately there. And you can just see, like, just the tiniest like snippet of this guy's hand come in to catch the puppet because it was leaning forward, but it doesn't pay off bad in the film because it just looks like the raptor's sort of lurching in a bit.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's definitely like a little hole where you can see some guy's hand.
I'm gonna have to go looking for that. That sounds awesome. And that Turtles movie, the first one, is full of little moments like that. Like when they're talking, you can see the actors like in the mouth, you can see their mouths, or like backdrops, like the rooftop scene, you can see like the cityscape hanging from a curtain rod and, you know, shit like that.
It's like the room.
Yeah.
It's the room.
just sets made of real places they could have just shot on.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Did you have any other worthwhile remakes to mention before we moved on?
We had a lot of mentions, to be fair, but we talked about the good ones.
We said Evil Dead and Resident Evil.
I think if we carry on the list, we'll just talk forever.
We will talk forever, and we're already going on 40 minutes.
It's films. There's a lot of ground to cover. Yeah. But I think we've got some good ones.
Yeah. There was one I'm kind of glad we don't have time for, because, you know, it still might be hot button with people, but the Ghostbuster remake. Holy shit, was that bad.
Well,
it wasn't good, was it?
No, I love the cast. The cast were great. Like, sure. I'm the biggest Christian Wiig fan, and I'm actually really excited to see her as Cheetah. But huge fan of her, and the rest of the cast as well. I thought they were good. But it was just the jokes. I didn't think the jokes were...
The jokes weren't good. The villain was not good.
No.
Like, none of it really was good.
I got a friend, though, who, like, controversially, he massively, like, shouts about the original Ghostbusters. He loves them. And he saw the new one, and he was like, I don't know why people are so angry. He's like, I think people are so angry because it's not the original Ghostbusters. And he was like, it's a completely different spin, and it's more light. But he was like, I didn't dislike
it. But then I really like the cartoon, and that's not the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's...
No one didn't do it for me. Horses, I watched it with my wife, and she didn't like it. I didn't like it.
The original does such a good job of walking the fine line between horror and comedy, and the comedy's very subtle. It's not slapstick, it's not punchline, it's just put out there, and if you catch it, you laugh. If not, you know, you're still caught in the seriousness of the story, where this movie just seemed to kind of admit, you know, punchline, fart jokey, like, quite literally, there were fart jokes in the damn movie. Like, that's just the lowest tier of comedy, in my opinion. Like, the second you pull out a fart joke, I'm out. I am fucking done.
Well, is there a literal fart joke in
there?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, so you see that fart joke, even the mention of it fucking shut the conversation down.
there's a third film coming, it's fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. Redemption is coming.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there's another Ghostbusters?
Yeah,
there's a teaser out for it already.
Oh. It's written and directed by the son of the guy who did the originals.
Oh, that'll be cool then. Surely. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
We can remain hopeful, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move right on into the comic vault here. And this is a little segment that you guys yourself are responsible for naming. Do you guys recall that?
I did get told about this. Apparently it was me.
Yes. I looked at this before I got on the phone with you guys. I think it was like episode 165, 166, something like that. So it's been a minute ago. It's been a little while ago. But yeah, the Comic Vault founders right back here in our presence. All right. So I'm just going to kick this off really quick with my book here. And if you guys have anything you want to mention, we'll do that afterwards. Cool?
Yeah.
All right, so the book I have is, again, something I found in the basement at my local comic book store, something I'm always saying on the show. I typically bypass, like, the $5 for, like, three-page new comics you see and go digging through the stuff from, like, the 90s and the 80s, 70s, if I can find it, because I love that stuff, absolutely love it. And while I was down there, I found something from 2010, an Image comic called 27, that, again, looks like it kind of touches on the, like, a fictional explanation as to why rock stars always die at 27. And it starts with this young musician on stage at the Staples Center in L.A., and he's talking about how in such a short time, just touring with his first album and with his band, they're on top of the world. They've got all these fans. They're on their way to stardom. And in the height of all this, his hand starts messing up on him somehow. Something's wrong with it. They don't exactly say why, but it's tensing up. Any kind of, like, playing guitar just is agonizing pain. So, and, you know, he's had to quit the band, and he's looking for any route possible to fix this. No modern medicine has worked yet. And he was kind of told about this guy, this really kind of creepy scientist/doctor who works in this back alley, and he goes to see. When you look at him, he kind of looks like a golem almost, just real stringy hair, weird shaped head. He's an odd looking creature. But again, this guy's desperate. It's the strangest setup. The doctor tells him to get in this cage here, and this cage is wired to all these other cages that have cats in them. Then the guy goes and pulls the lever, and this big explosion happens, and all these cats explode, and this guy comes out of this transformation chamber feeling the same. His hand's the same. He's like, what the hell? You know, you didn't fix anything. The only difference is on his chest is like this steampunk metal like plate thing that has all these knobs that look like would be on the front of an amplifier. And he starts kind of messing with them and realizes when he hits a certain frequency, his hand works, but only for like about 2 to 3 hours.
So he's himself in.
Yeah, exactly. Then after it quits working, he, you know, turns to another frequency and learns that all of a sudden now he's got this crazy ability to sculpt. Like he breaks a window, takes all the glass and makes this crazy, crazy sculpture out of it. But the whole time he's like, what the hell am I doing? How am I doing this? I can't stop. Like he's tuned into something. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, when the explosion happened, when the lever was pulled, the doctor exploded as well, exploded with all the cats.
That's not good.
No, not good at all. But it's an important detail I glazed right over. You know, again, after the sculpture, whatever gift that he was inheriting from that channel faded away. He clicks to a third one, and then all of a sudden the room is filled with ghosts. One of the ghosts being the doctor that did this to him, gave him the power, put him in the cage and everything. He goes, what did you do to me? He goes, this was never going to work, was it? He goes, it's typically worked. He goes, this is typically an exchange with a demon who's obsessed with the number 9. He goes, you're the age 27, you know, 7 plus 2 is 9. That's why he wanted your soul. And that's why I had all these cats hooked up to your cage and kind of like I was going to give their 9 lives over to this demon in exchange for this gift. It's out there. I know, guys. Bear with me.
It's wild.
I'm in for it. I like it.
Yeah, it's really freaking interesting. But this guy keeps saying, you know, this is bullshit. This is bullshit. And the entity's like, look at Django Reinhardt. His hand melted in a fire, but still played amazing guitar. Les Paul, his arm was destroyed in a car accident. Tony Iommi of Black Sabbath has lost 2 of his fingertips in a steel press and still plays. And then he caps it with, Def Leppard has a drummer with 1 arm. He goes, this works. This has worked several times in the past. Something's not working right with your situation. And that's kind of where I'm just going to leave off. Did you have a question? Sound like you were trying to say something.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I just, Def Leppard genuinely has a 1-arm drummer.
Yeah. Yeah. All those facts were true. In Def Leppard's height of fame, he was in a car accident. The car flipped and the seatbelt ripped his left arm off completely. And he's still been drumming. They made a whole new set for him. This isn't in the comic. This isn't real life. They made a set where he's able to control snare and hi-hat with his feet, and he still has the 1 arm he can use. But yeah, he still, to this day, drums with them.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Look it up. It's insane. And also, look up this comic, 27. There's so many details to give you, and if I give everything, we'll be here forever. But it's such a cool comic. I'm glad I stumbled across it. And check it out. 27.
Who writes and illustrates it?
It is by it's written by Charles Soule, and it's illustrated by Renzo Podesta. Podesta?
I read something about Charles. I've read quite a lot of Charles Soule comics, and he actually now, like he said that he said something about one of his favorite things that he's written. And I think it was the one that you're talking about.
Oh, really?
He mentioned, yeah. One of the things, like, he was asked a question, like, what was, like, top few comics you've written, and I'm pretty sure that was on his list.
27.
He was talking about the end of Curse Words.
Right.
And he was saying, like, he said that it's coming to an end and stuff, and then he went into this whole thing of questions, and this comic came up, definitely.
Wow. Nice. Okay, cool. That makes me even more excited to tag him. Maybe we'll get a response. That'd be cool. No, it's a good book. I recommend looking it up. It's really cool. If you're into music, if you're into any of that kind of stuff, you're going to dig this.
Yeah, check it out.
All right, guys. What about you? You guys have anything you want to mention?
Luke, do you want to go?
Well, I'm pretty sure last time we all spoke, I've literally just reread the hardcover version of White Knight, the Sean Murphy comic. But okay. I think last time I did this, I was reading the single issues, and I was like, what have you read recently? I was like, White Knight. And then literally I finished reading the hardcover of White Knight. So that is the latest thing I've read, but that is still a fantastic comic. I can't remember if I spoke about it here a lot. I feel like I
maybe you did, but even if you did, that was like, what, again, 166? That's over 100 episodes ago. I'm sure you'll be fine mentioning it again.
White Knight is Batman comic. It is by Sean Gordon Murphy, who's a fantastic artist and now writer. And it is about, it's set in a different, it's not in the Batman canon, but he's in this opening bit, basically, Joker's on the loose, Batman's chasing Joker, and they catch up with each other, and Joker basically takes all these pills and says, this is like, this is going to be how I win, basically. And Batman's like, urgh. And then basically Joker, all the madness gets put to the back of Joker's head, and he basically becomes like more human, and he's just this normal guy, and he's very, very smart. And the idea is that Joker has just been like a mental patient, basically, and he's not been able to hold all the bad stuff back. But when he's thinking clearly, he's very smart, and he's well dressed, and he's calm, and he basically turns Gotham against Batman, saying, look at all the damage Batman's done over the years. He is the psycho. Joker has been the victim, and Batman has been the villain. Batman and his own villain. He owes Gotham millions because the police just let him get away with destroying things. Like, he's damaged people. He's hurt people. Blah, blah, blah. Half these prisoners in the prison don't deserve to be in there. It's just because Batman's got them, and you know, we put them in there because he's Batman. And bit by bit, as the comic goes on, Joker turns. I can't remember what he's called in it.
Jack Napier.
And Jack turns pretty much all of Batman's allies against him. And the whole time you're thinking, Batman is a bit of a dick, actually. And then, without ruining it, it draws out into a big conclusion during the comic. But it's probably that, along with Tom King's Mr. Miracle. They have been my two favorite things of last year that I read. And I got all the single issues to the White Knight, and then I bought the trade paperback, and then I just got the hardcover to reread it again, even though I could have just gone downstairs and got the single issues. But I think it's that good. It's such a nice change of pace from just the standard Batman Joker story. And it's really, really unique, I think, to have Joker completely step out of the Joker madness and be like
that guy.
That guy. You didn't know what was going to happen. Issues, because you just assumed you just thought he was just still Joker. Like, he was just putting on such a good act. But there are some twists in it and stuff, and like so many good, like Mr. Freeze is in it, and he's like one of the best villains ever. And it's a really good like ride, and each issue I was looking forward to the next one. Like, I was saying to Nick all the time, I was like, this is just so good. And now there's a sequel coming out to it, Curse of the White Knight, so I highly recommend if anyone hasn't written it and they just want to read because I guess it's just a standalone, you wouldn't have to read the sequel because it ends on a note where you wouldn't have to carry on. It's just something a bit different Batman wise so that is what I've read and what I love.
The illustrations are amazing as well.
Yeah, the illustrations are great. Like, it's, you will be so into that universe.
I do remember you talking about this book, and I'm just as intrigued now as the first time. Like, I totally forgot about it. I want to go look this up, because what an interesting take on the Joker that you've never seen. Him, like, joining the side of society and pointing them, you know, their hatred toward the Batman. That'd be awesome.
He gets, like, Nightwing on his side, and there's two Harley Quinns running around like crazy people.
It's phenomenal.
It's really clever. He doesn't actually... You're sort of reading it, rooting for him to be the villain he normally is, but he keeps proving that he's actually not. He's I'm not a villain. And I started off feeling Joker's gone. But at the same time, you're like, this is probably the most effective any villain has ever been against Batman. And then purely because they're not a villain. The fact that it is the Joker is the best dynamic to it. Like, Nick had all the singles, and I think I've read everything but the last...
No, one. You finished
it. I read all of them. I have this habit of reading singles and then being like, right, I'll just get the full novel when it comes out, so I don't read the last part. But I think, I probably have read all of them, because they were really, really good. So,
fantastic. Can't wait. Very good. All right. Anybody else have one they want to mention?
Yeah, well, I'm normally terrible. This section, I think every time it's come to me, I've been like, well... Haven't read much in a minute, but have been looking at this. However, this time,
I'll name it.
Yeah, I'll name it, but I have nothing to put in. But this time, I do. So I have been reading the Watchmen series, Doomsday Clock.
I'm not very far in. Well, actually, how far am I in? Nick's been lending me the issues. I've been reading them as I go.
You've got one issue.
I've got one to read.
You've got nines in your bag. I saw. Yeah, okay. I wasn't going through your bag. I just saw
it. You tripped and fell in my bag. Yeah, I was going past the wallet, and then after pocketing all of your bank cards, I noticed you were reading Watchmen. So yeah, I've been reading that. Right, how best to explain this without spoiling anything? It's actually the...
I would keep it minimal.
Yeah, it is so easy to spoil. Okay, so considering if you've read The Watchmen, that is where it begins. Yeah?
Kind of.
Safe to say? Okay. Yeah, this is why. It's an absolute minefield for spoilers. So what I've done is I've picked something that I want to talk about and now I've kind of blocked myself talking about it.
Just keep it to it.
Enjoy. Okay, it is... really, really good, essentially, is what I'm saying. But it kind of brings together... Actually, that's not a spoiler. It brings together the main DC universe, the continuity, with The Watchmen, which is...
All right.
I've heard of. Because I was a massive fan of the Watchmen films, the Watchmen comic, mm-hmm. and obviously of like the DC continuity and stuff. And I wondered why they'd never been putting a thing together. Like, especially with, like... cinematically, like Zack Snyder having done Watchmen and then doing the films, which, you know, mixed opinion of his material. But I was sort of, through most things, I don't know why Watchmen and, you know, Batman and the Joker and all that weren't all in the same universe. And what this comic series does is do that. So you get the joy of the Watchmen alongside the joy of all other things DC.
Yeah.
So you get the, I mean, it's not really a spoiler. We knew it was coming. Rorschach and Batman. That's the
dynamic.
That dynamic happens.
That
and
is
it's,
something that I feel
it
like
is amazing.
A lot of people have been waiting for as well.
Mm.
The idea of
and,
Rorschach.
Yeah. And seeing the rogues gallery of the two combining, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you how Rorschach meets Batman, because obviously, you know, Rorschach died, didn't he? But yeah, basically, yeah, the story's great. I'm not going to spoil anything.
You've got me intrigued, man. Yeah, yeah, I'd love to see a dynamic between Rorschach and Batman. That'd be crazy.
Comics, yeah. So from me not being very good at reading comics and keeping up with series, even though I've read this incredibly slowly, I have been riveted by everything I've read.
It's a slow book, and it's taken ages to get to issue 9.
Oh, I feel like I'm really behind, but maybe I'm not.
Bi-monthly.
I can't remember. Issue 1 came out, like, I don't know, I was probably like 6. I have no idea. Time has gone very slow.
The art's really nice for it as well. Like,
it's very nice. It slots right on to where it should, artistically, story-wise, all the characters in it. Do you know when sometimes people carry on, like Watchmen, I did feel at first is like a story which you don't really need to mess with. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like carrying on with it. I'm always scared as if they're going to ruin something, but they have not ruined anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the perfect continuation of Watchmen and the perfect tie-in with the rest of DC so far.
And it's the whole DC universe and not just Batman and his universe.
It's several.
Yeah, you get
DC characters.
I think Batman is like the key to joining it together. So
and
he's
Flash.
Flash. So they're sort of kind of key to it,
and Superman as well.
Yeah,
they're all there.
Yeah, they're all there. They're all there. But I think it eases it in nicely with the whole, like I say, the Batman Rorschach dynamic that everyone. I mean, I definitely wanted.
Yeah.
I feel like being two detectives from other worlds.
I feel like
it's perfect.
Batman and Rorschach, everybody wanted, and then also Superman and Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my
it does,
God. Yeah.
I haven't, like I say, what am I, issue 9?
9, I think 10's out on Wednesday.
10's out Wednesday,
yeah. So I literally got to read 9 and then 10. How many are there in the arc?
12.
12, okay.
There's no graphic novel version of it yet either.
Yeah. Is there not? No plans?
I think it'll be towards the end of the year.
Okay. I'm kind of tempted with it, actually, to do what I normally do, because I quite like doing it, is to read up until, like, the last one and then wait and have the full book, and I'll reread through the entire book.
You're a maniac.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I just like doing it. With Batman,
All-Star Batman.
I did it with that. I read most of the singles to the end. I was like, you know what? I want to read this as a whole. Left the last issue out. I bought the full graphic novel, the volume 1.
Yeah.
And I haven't read it.
Yeah. You read everything in the graphic novel up until the last issue.
That's it. I still haven't. So that's the plan. Like,
building anticipation.
Yeah, I know. But then I've got it all sat in front of me. And I'm like, okay, here we go. I'll start from the beginning. I'll go page by page, as you do when you read a comic. And then, it'll blow my mind. Yeah, we'll do it. The same scale 1 to 10. I don't I'll read this from front to back, upside down. Yeah. I don't know, but it's more fun my way.
I understand, and it leaves incentive for getting the trade. If you read all of them before then, you might be less likely to get it, and it's still like a surprise payoff.
I'm not a singles guy either for comics, so I don't buy it. Yeah, wait.
Sadly, I'm a single comics guy.
Yeah.
And a graphic novel.
Yeah, these guys have both all got single issues stacked to the roof. Yeah. I quite like having just it all at once, like convenience wise. Otherwise,
just
I feel
Nick's.
Yeah. I basically Nick lends me titles.
Yeah.
I then buy them in bulk. I buy them as a book if I enjoy it. But yeah.
Well, I'm sitting in a room that has comic boxes for walls, so you know what side of the spectrum I'm on.
Yeah, yeah. Doomsday Clock is definitely phenomenal. Anyone who enjoys any DC or any Watchmen should definitely invest. It's
very
great.
Good.
Okay, nice. So my turn.
Your turn, yes.
Really been deciding what to talk about because there's two, but I'm going to talk about one in detail and then just lightly mention the other. Here.
Maybe mention. Oh, you're mentioning it now.
Yeah,
so I didn't know if you were going to do it at the end because, like, then we will definitely.
No. So the lightly mentioned one is Gideon Falls, which is by Jeff Lemire and
Sorrento.
That sounds familiar. I've heard of this before.
It's an Image book. It's on what issue 12, 13? 13 just 13, came out.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. It's like a thriller horror, which is. Like the hardest thing to ever describe because it's about like sort of like how these two people connect through time and how a black barn is kind of like the middle point, like the center point of these connecting things.
So out of context.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. But like, the thing, like describing that book to anybody is impossible.
It's not the easiest. It's
I just had to explain 27, so come on.
Yeah, that's true.
But this is the thing.
This is easy going.
This is the book that I was like, I'm going to lightly mention and just say it's got an honorable mention. But then the book I'm actually going into is something called Black Badge, which is from Matt Kind and Tyler Jenkins. And it's Matt Kind.
I thought you said Matt Kite. I was like, that's one of
your
my mates.
Your mate, bro. No, Matt Kind and Tyler Jenkins. And it's like, it's this story about. Sort of like a scouts group who are called the Black Badge, and initially the book presents them as like this scouts group that are kind of doing the usual scouts things, like going around like making fires and
marshmallows,
marshmallows, that kind of thing. And then at the end, you kind of realize that they're actually used as like a secret government like kind of group that go in and sort of like. Because they're a scout group, can get over enemy lines. So I think the first issue is set in like North Korea. And it's sort of like them traversing their way through this kind of like country, and then they end up at this site and sort of paint a target for the military to bomb. But it's all like a black ops thing, hence Black Badge. And then it sort of, as it's gone on, you get more and more kind of detail of this world and how all the other kind of like scouts groups get involved, and they've all got different positions that they're linked to in the government. And it's a really fun little world, but it's also quite dark. And I think that the thing that I kind of always take away from the two things that I really love about it is, first of all, the illustrations are like they're like watercolors, so it's sort of like they pencil it in and then they'll kind of like give a wash over it, and it just looks fantastic. But then secondly, the story is sort of like it's got like a Goonies feel to it, but there's like a real sense of adventure. Like every time you read it, you're like, oh, I wonder what the Black Badges are going to do this week. But in like a
slap your knee,
yeah, but then you just it's quite dark and you're a bit like, oh my god, that was heavy. But it's from Boom Studios that put it out, and it's one of the nicest books I've kind of ever flipped through. The team did another book called Grass Kings a couple of years ago, and that looked amazing, so that's kind of how I jumped onto this Black Badge book. But yeah, Black Badge is my main choice, and then Gideon Falls gets an honorable mention.
I enjoy the idea. You said the Black Badge is kind of like a scout group, and you know, being that what their entity is, that gives them the upper hand to kind of sneak behind enemy lines and stuff.
Yeah,
that reminds me of I don't know if any of you guys have read X-23, the, you know, Laura Kinney, Wolverine's daughter, whole story. But there's a part in there, like when she's still really young, where they're you know, testing her in the field, and her target is this a politician of sorts who's under heavy guard. and they dress her up like a little crippled girl. They put like crutches on her arms and have her going in there like, please, sir, can I get a picture with you? And, you know, because she's crippled, they're like, sure, one quick picture. They bring her in, and as quick as the flash on the camera goes off, she slit the throats of everybody in the room and is gone. It's insane. Good. But that's what made me think of. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So definitely check it out. I think it finishes in July, so I'd imagine the like paperbacks will be coming out soon. But yeah, it's just such a fun book to read, and I always get excited when it comes into the comic book shop. I'm like, oh my god, I didn't know this was coming out today.
Is it full
color, all like watercolor with it? Yeah, the tone of it is so good.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So there you go.
I'm going to check that out, too. Man, this list just keeps getting longer and longer. Shit, I got to check out. I'm running out of place for comics. All right. Very good comic vault right there. And before we move on, there's something a few quick things I need to mention I should have done before the comic vault, but I just forgot. Our friends at Adult Swim last week sent us some stuff. One thing being some Jellies merch. I think it was like it was a big tote bag. Really strong tote bag. I want to thank them for sending that our way, but that was to promote season 2 of the Jellies, which has already premiered. It comes on Monday at midnight. I think there's 4 episodes out already. And another thing that Adult Swim sent our way was the DVD season 7 of Venture Brothers, which is coming out June 4th. I cannot wait to check this out and tell you guys what to expect from it. But yeah, if you guys are interested in that, again, June 4th is the DVD release of season 7 of Venture Brothers. And with that behind us, let's turn our full attention over to Nick, Harry, and Luke and talk about Odyssey. Guys, I want to thank you again for being here. I always love catching up with you guys. It's so much fun. And I love the universe you're building. You know, we've talked to other people on the show who have been building universes themselves, but I haven't seen anything quite as developed, I guess, as what you guys have been putting out. And this Odyssey is going to be the next step in the Snow Universe, if I'm not mistaken. So if you could first tell our new listeners a little bit about the Snow Universe and then how Odyssey is going to fit in said universe.
Yeah, so the Snow Universe is there's sort of like a central story which is called Snow the Dawn, and that'll be a 12-part series that kind of follows the tagline for it, I guess, is that it's a superhero story, but it's set against a politically and environmentally ruined England. So that's kind of the world we get to play in. But we sort of realized that this world was quite rich, so it was just a little bit more than just a superhero story, and we started expanding it a few years ago. Mainly with like crime stories. I've realized we've got a lot of crime. If anybody wants to pitch like a romance story to us, please do, because I feel like we're missing it.
Yeah.
Give us a rom-com. so we sort of started expanding it. And then probably like last year is when it kind of took a different turn, where we'd sort of done this graphic novel in 2017, which is called The Eventide. And then after that, a friend of mine wrote a kind of a two-part one-shot. A two-shot?
A two-shot.
Let's call it a two. which is called Whistler. And when he started writing that, I sort of realized that I really like the idea that this universe is almost like, it's like an open source project. So it's kind of to the extent where somebody can come to us and pitch a story or pitch, I don't know, something in that world, and they can go do it. And we'll kind of just help them out wherever we can. But the idea is theirs, and the world is theirs to kind of play with. So Whistleblower sort of came out. And then through that, and this leads pretty well into Odyssey, I realized we didn't have, we sort of had like the beginning of the universe where there was sort of like global warming had hit and climate change had hit, but we didn't have an end point. And so Harry and I kind of constructed
the end,
which is Odyssey. It is the very end point of the universe. So it will be the full stop in the Snow Universe, and then everything that happens in between is all these stories that we'll keep creating.
Keep coming in.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask, because your press release was very specific with that final point in the Snow Universe. I didn't mean if this was just going to close it all, or if we're just, you know, looking at the other end, and like you guys are saying, you're going to still be creating material in between.
We still feel like it's a world that has so many stories you can tell in it. But we sort of just wanted to, before we went full open source with it, where anybody can start pitching ideas or whatever, we were like, okay, this is ultimately where it will go. So this will be the last point in the world. But otherwise,
I think, because on our side, it's a very like slow burning project. Like Nick and I have like
we do like a, the first 12 parts. We're still working. Still haven't finished four.
Yeah.
So like it's steady. We've done well finding help.
Yeah.
Exterior help, Luke and co. So like, yeah, but I think we did have this thing where we're like, Snow the Dawn is like 12 parts. We know where that ends, but that doesn't actually conclude anything on the scale that other people have been getting involved. So we're like, just to help with where we know things go and where things can end up, we're like, why not just write the end? Like like you said, the full stop to it all, so that if people want to dip in anywhere, they know where.
Yeah,
you know, they know the full timeline without necessarily knowing what goes on. They've got like how it starts, how it ends.
Yeah,
and providing like we're down with it, we just throw their story in where they want it to go, kind of thing. We've jumped off and we're letting other people do our work for us.
But it's great to have so many different minds creating a universe. Otherwise, the whole universe is going to have all the same feel, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we vet it. So like, if something's outrageous and they start bringing in like, I don't know,
Voodoo Wi-Fi.
I think we have an episode title.
There we go. So long as you find a place to slide that in. For the most part, we're pretty down for whatever people come up with. So long as it like fits in and it's logical, we support it. So
And
you know, it's cool to I guess see an end with a blank middle. You know, have you guys ever watched Breaking Bad?
Yeah,
or even with Better Call Saul, you know, those episodes start with clips of what your character's going through in the future without any explanation. And it doesn't necessarily even get answered in that episode. It's something that's going to get answered through a series of episodes over a series of, you know, a couple years. So it's awesome to put that ending to see how, you know, the butterfly effect of all these events plays out, but also introduce a whole new set of thought to that space between. I love what you guys are doing.
Thanks. Yeah, it does open opportunity for us. Like, if a load of things fall into place, we might see something, hopefully, really clever that we can do at some point that, like, ties it all in.
Yeah.
Because it's all chronological and, like you say, chapter by chapter, something might happen that we go, ooh, we can...
Yeah,
turn this whole thing on its head. We're hoping that does happen.
Yeah,
but
generally it's just quite exciting to see everybody's like approach to that world. Like Whistleblower is really cool to kind of like see. It was sort of like the first thing that I think Harry and I completely had no real involvement with. Like the Eventide, we sort of kind of
everything
like,
that was in it. We sort of saw
Whistleblower was very much like two people just went and did their thing, and then we were like.
We looked at it.
Yeah, we looked at it at the end, and we were like,
I saw it when I've literally just read the scripts. I haven't done anything.
Yeah, there was literally nothing we did.
Yeah.
It just sort of existed, and that was a real kind of like big thing for us. We were like, oh, that'd be really cool for the rest of the universe to do a lot of that, where people can kind of just come in and randomly throw ideas at us.
It's really worked, though, because there's plenty of things in there which are awesome ideas that we just wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, gotcha. And
I'm not even like ashamed to admit it. Like people sometimes have better ideas than you.
Yeah, gotcha.
And some of the stuff in Whistleblower, like we'd sat down and read through the script and we were like, that's actually genius.
Yeah, there's like loads of things.
They've basically taken a few elements from what we were doing and it's evolved beyond what we'd actually have conceived because we've got our head tied down on other things. So it's a good platform, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice. It's a good little thing to have kind of in the world, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
So now you guys all being together in the same place for the first time now. Now, is this part of this Odyssey project you guys are working on, or is this just strictly for pleasure, just you guys getting to hang out for the first time?
Pretty much hang out.
Yeah, it's pretty much hanging out, but also we did get to finish a few things, didn't we?
Yeah, we worked on some stuff when we got here.
It's much easier to do it in person, obviously, so it's nice that these guys flew over to come and see me. But it's like finishing up a few loose ends, I guess, on the comic.
But I mean, you went through the script a lot the other night.
Final script touches and stuff. And
I finalised a few bits on the front,
Bits and bobs, but mainly
chilling out.
Hanging out, talking about comics.
Getting sunburned.
Getting sunburned. Well, that's awesome, though. You guys do get to have that time together. It's interesting to work with somebody you never see. We have another show we do with a guy out in California, and though, you know, we've talked to him several times through this show and through the other. We've never met face-to-face, so I look forward to that day. You know, just, I don't know, it'd be a whole new experience. Be like meeting the same person again, right?
Already met. You don't know.
Right. So again, this is coming out in October this year. Where are people going to be able to get their hands on this? Is this going to be only digital or in stores as well?
I think it's both. From
uncertain.
Because we're with Black Spot Comics, and the way that they released their books was they did a print run, which was I think mainly available through Etsy and a bunch of comic shops in the UK. And then I know that the Etsy was obviously available like international, so that's kind of like worldwide. I think it goes on Comixology as well, so it'll be digital as well. But it should all sort of launch around the October kind of like window. Print's definitely October because it's for when we're over in Norway for the Comic-Con. I hope digital's around the same time, but there could be a little month delay on digital, normally is, but
yeah,
we'll see. Yeah. So it'll be both.
Gotcha. You're going to have to let me know when you guys are about to launch this. You know, give me about a month's notice. We can get you back on the show to promote the release too, if you'd like.
Yeah. I mean, Nick and Harry will be over here again at the
Comic-Con
in Norway. So that's the beginning of October.
Yeah. So we'll call that some good damn timing, if you ask me.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll have to put that in the schedule and definitely do that. But, I'll be linking people over to your guys'... should it just be Black Spot Comics now, or do you guys still have your own domain to go to?
Yeah, I mean, like, we've still got our handles.
We've still got the Snow page and our bits, but Black Spot, I suppose Black Spot's the convenient one, I guess.
They're our publisher. So.
And what exactly is the URL again for the Snow page?
So the Snow website is snowtheuniverse.wordpress.com.
There it is.
And I think Black Spot's Instagram is Black Spot Comics.
That's bad. We don't know.
Black Spot Comics.
it is. Black Spot Comics. I do have that written down.
It will come up.
Yeah.
It literally says the logo is just Black Spot Comics with a black spot as the O.
Yeah.
Those smart bastards. It makes a
lot of sense. Very to the point.
Yeah.
Well, very good. I just want to know where I can be directing people and who to tag in all these posts. So, guys, I want to thank you again so much for being here and looking forward to you coming back.
Marvelous. Cheers.
Thank you.
And I want to encourage our listeners to go to candairpodcast.com to check out more details on this episode, past episodes. You can check out our special guest wall and see some of our YouTube videos on there. Also, find us on Twitter at CandairPod and on Instagram at canned_air. And one more time, if you like what we're doing, want to throw some money our way, head over to patreon.com/cannedairpod. And for $5 a month, you get access to our Canned Air Patreon pod. Again, about 20 episodes up there for you. So I'd call that worth $5, right? Come on. Also, if you're in the Columbus area, June 1st, head over to the Korg Gaming Convention in Hilliard, Ohio. Your boys here at Canned Air are going to have a table, meeting people, shaking hands, kissing babies. And if you come up to the table and say, I'm part of the Canned Air Nation, we might just have something special for you. So we look forward to seeing you there. And you might have heard me mention in the show earlier, our other podcast, What If. Go to whatifpod.com. You can check it out there. It's just a show where we take a single twist on reality, like what if people could fly, or what if Bigfoot had actually been discovered, and then we talk for about 45 minutes of the ramifications of that on the world. It's been a lot of fun so far, and again, you can go to whatifpod to check that out, or you can just, in your podcast player of choice, search Canned Air Productions, and both Canned Air and What If should come up. But I think that about does it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
Nick Gid.
Harry Hughes.
Luke Bantz.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Why don't you come over here and spray paint your name on the wall?
But I don't wanna.
What are you, chicken?
Hold on there, boys.
Wow, it's Flint.
Instead of writing your name, write CannedAirPodcast.com and help spread the word.
Well, that's a great idea. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.